accession number 23195, Reel 1.
Mr. Roy Bolton, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Bolton?
I was born on the 19th of May, 1924, in London, West London, Shepherd's Bush, to be precise.
And could you tell us a little about your parents and your family background?
My father was a Yorkshireman by birth, came from Halifax. He enlisted in the First World War and served for about 4 years in the army. And on D-Mod.
Do you know which regiment he was with?
The Duke of Wellington's, whatever it was called, Duke of Wellington. Duke of Wellington's regiment. I'm mumbling, sorry.
All right.
On D-Mob, he felt the urge to come to London, where he met my mother. For a time, they worked together as domestic staff, a kind of butler and housekeeper, in a rather grand house in Holland Park, West London, which I remember very slightly. I think I was taken there perhaps after they left it. Later on, my father, who had been trained and apprenticed as a French polisher, returned to that type of work. I have one brother, who's about 3.5 years older than me, and we both went to school, one after the other, in Hammersmith, at the Latimer Upper School, which was a grammar school, where we received quite a good education. But we were both scholarship boys, so my father had no fees to pay.
What were your subjects did you particularly shine in or enjoy, either or?
Always languages. As soon as I got to the grammar school, I started on Latin and French and picked up on German later. And that's been an abiding interest for me. Years later, in France, in Normandy, my little bit of French came in handy. It was a question of trying to scrounge eggs off a local farmer in exchange for cigarettes. I was quite popular with my mates for that reason.
What about sport? Did you have any interest in sport?
I'm bound to say I had very little interest in sport once I left the sort of primary or junior school. Spent much of my time and energies later in avoiding being put on the football team or the cricket team, although I did rather like cricket, having inherited that from my Yorkshire father, who loved cricket and was a good club cricketer. I never was a good cricketer, but I used to enjoy a game in the garden.
Did you have any other hobbies, or were you a member of any of the boys' organisations at the time, Boy Scouts, Boys Brigade, anything like that?
Not at that time, no, I can't recall any. No, in fact, I was a slightly shy, slightly withdrawn character, and didn't make friends too easily. I think I got over that later, especially when I was in the army, but at that time, no.
How old were you? Were you at school at Latimer's when the war broke out still?
Yes, I was, yes. Yes, I just reached the age of 1939. I was about, 15, I think, just reached 15. And at the stage where it was all matriculation in general schools, the examinations then current, of course. I think I scraped through matriculation and would have been thinking about leaving when the war was showing signs of breaking out. Now, my family had relations in a place called Peebles, a small town in the lowlands of Scotland. I had an uncle and aunt there, and we were actually staying with them as war broke out, or to be more exact, just at the end of August. It was about to break out. So a family conference was held, and it was decided to leave young Roy, 15, in Peebles, because the day after the war broke out, we feared a mighty air raid would have wiped out London, and I would be a survivor. So I remained in Peebles. So it was interesting that the war, as soon as it arrived on the scene, entailed a very great change in my circumstances. I found myself living with a new family, really. Well, part of my family in the general sense, but an uncle and aunt. And an entirely new place, which I loved very much, because it was a beautiful area of Scotland, in a small country town, so very different from the vast metropolis. And my uncle had a part share. He was a part owner of a rather splendid grocery shop, a licensed grocer's on the high street of Peebles. And I became fairly adept, actually, at working in the shop because that was an obvious thing to do for me.
You didn't go. You didn't continue your education. You'd
yeah,
already
I did.
Been it.
Yes, I should come to that next. Yes, that's right. I signed on, as it were, with the People's High School, the local school, which was the Scottish equivalent of something like a grammar school, but had a much wider scope of the type of children there. And I then had to begin to, of course, learn to speak with a good Scotch accent, which was rather difficult, because the children there thought I was very stuck up with the way I spoke. So that was a slight problem. It was a very good school educationally. I sort of picked up where I'd left off.
Did you find it a better education than you'd been getting at Latimer's?
I suspected it was, yes. Yes, I think it was. Scottish folk are renowned for their keenness on education, and I think that was borne out by what I came across. The one difference I felt was a slight change in the disciplinary ways. There were some very tough children there, as far as I was concerned, and they would sometimes cause disruption in the classroom where one or two teachers were not strong enough, which I'd never come across before. So that was something rather different. The other thing, of course, was it was co-educational, which was a normal thing then in Scotland. So I was in a class of 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, mixed, both sexes, which, to be honest, I found rather disconcerting. Looking back on that, I'm ashamed of myself, but I mean, that's the way I felt at that time. That was all right, but...
What about the actual day war broke out? Do you have any memories of the broadcast?
Yes, it was Sunday, I think it was. It was a Sunday, wasn't it? Mm.
Yes.
Yep, yes. My aunt had a rather primitive radio, which is a comical loudspeaker that came to a point. But it did produce a reasonable quality of sound after you twiddle with the knob. So we actually listened to Chamberlain saying his famous words on the lines of no such reply has been received, and so we are now at war. And so I remember that quite vividly. Shortly afterwards, I had occasion to go to a shop or something, and on the way back, to my amazement and petrifaction, the sirens all sounded. It was, I think, a famous incident when a plane somewhere off the south coast caused the air raid system to be alerted throughout the entire country. Rather astonishing. Of course, nothing happened, and the all clear sounded soon after.
So how did you find your life? I mean, you settled down fairly well into this.
Yes, indeed, I settled down quite well. Very different from what I was used to, but I enjoyed it very much. Everything was a little bit different. The way my aunt cooked food and the food itself was slightly more Scottish than I was accustomed to. She had three children, a boy and a girl twins and an older girl, and we all got on well. And I enjoyed taking walks in the beautiful countryside over the Scottish moors, as it were, and enjoy being with the children. The other thing I got to do there was that my uncle got me into the shop from time to time. And first of all, I got to know the van driver. It's a small country town, and many of their customers were people living in rather grand country houses in a neighborhood of perhaps radius of 10 or 12 miles around. And these people would ring up, or their butler would ring the shop and read out a shopping list. That would be taken down. And then it's quite an industry of someone in the shop making up these orders and putting the various groceries and so on into baskets and labelling them with the address. And the van then took them round and delivered them.
So you helped in a sort of part-time capacity?
So I helped in the part-time capacity, mainly for the fun of it. And I learnt to do things like making the butter ration go further for customers by mixing it with the margarine, using those splendid... paddles.
Tell me about the effect of food rationing. I mean, I know you only work there part-time, but what effect did food rationing have on working in a store and on sort of the whole business of groceries?
At first, the rations were, of course, quite generous, so it was not so much the scarcity problem, but they were a thorough nuisance in the shop because there were coupons of one sort or another which had to be checked and marked off and generally sorted out. And... in the little office at the back of the shop, there was a fair bit of clerical work arising from that, I think. And in my first summer holiday when I was in Peebles, my uncle's partner asked me if I'd come along to the shop regularly on a regular basis and give a hand. And I wasn't quite sure what he was up to, but he said, oh, you'll find it very interesting. So I found myself then immured daily in this rather small room, not much bigger than a cupboard, with an elderly lady who was employed as a bookkeeper, and had a ferociously ugly face. But I discovered had a very soft heart, and I really got on well with her eventually. And there I was required to do basic clerical duties of copying out lists of groceries which had been delivered and pricing them or giving them to somebody else, I think, to price. I was rather disappointed with that because not much fun. I got stuck with it. And my employer, so to speak, my uncle's partner, occasionally said, "You're doing well, Roy, you're doing well. We shan't forget this, no, when we come to the end of your holiday," implying that riches would be showered upon me, cash. So I remained very hopeful until the final day, when he thanked me effusively, as I was about to return to school, said I'd done a great job, and handed me over what I thought was a less than princely sum of 10 shillings. Well, of course, in those days, 10 shillings wasn't bad. It was real money, but nevertheless, it was rather less than my grandiose dreams had led me to expect. It was a splendid experience, a great disappointment in life, and failure of employment to meet my needs.
And what else? What happened next? And after that, that was the summer of 1940.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Now, let me think of the timing. Yes, so I was there in Peebles from September 1939 throughout the whole of 1940, still being educated. And then to 1941. And at some stage I sat the Scottish examination, Scottish general schools or whatever, which I managed to pass. That was on a similar level to matriculation, so it was nothing special. But I added a little certificate to my collection, and I passed that. And 1941, it was high time I left school. So, prompting from the family, from my father and mother, I think, I took an examination for the London County Council.
Now tell me about that examination. What was it like?
Very, very similar to the other examinations I'd taken, which were the general schools or matriculation, that same sort of level. Now, the strange thing about it, the peculiar thing for me about this was it was agreed somehow, I'm not quite sure who negotiated this, I can no longer remember, but it was agreed that the LCC would send the papers to me, or to my family in Scotland, in a sealed envelope, and that I would sit the examination in the headmaster's study at the school, on my own, you see. And that's what I did for a couple of days. I attended and sat alone in the classroom and answered the questions which on the papers given to me by the headmaster. Well, I'm bound to say, when passing the papers over to me, made sundry little noises and signs and pointed to things and was clearly advising me which things to answer, which I thought was very helpful. Maybe that was the reason why I got passed and why I achieved the required marks. Anyway, I was accepted by the council and asked to come to London for an interview. So I think it was in April 1941, thereabouts. I took my farewell of Peebles very, very sadly. By that time I was very attached to the place and to my aunt and family. And I had a hard job to be manly and not burst into tears on the Peebles stations. I took my farewell.
You were rejoining your parents. Had they visited you during the...
Yes. Certainly so my mother had.
So did you sort of join them back at the Shepherd's Bush?
No, we moved to, sometime, I hadn't mentioned this, we moved to East Acton sometime before the war, and we were there now living in an up-to-date three-bedroom semi-detached, well, a house built about 1928-29, but much the same as such houses are still today.
So that's where you went back to?
So I went back to there, that's right.
Now what work were you doing for the London County Council?
I worked as a pay clerk to begin with, working out the weekly pay for the building trades who were employed on housing maintenance of the council houses and flats. So I had to work out each week from the basis of timesheets supplied by the workers how much they were due. I remember that a building labourer got something like £2.19 and a carpenter about £3.18 and 4 pence, about similar unlikely figures. which doesn't sound much now, but I suppose it was reasonable in those days. And once
did you enjoy the work?
Yes, I enjoyed it.
What was a sort of typical day like? I mean, you know, what time would you start?
I started at 9 o'clock and finished at 5. It was by no means arduous. I worked in a small office. This was it was a wartime emergency office, because County Hall, which is the main headquarters in Westminster, where most of the staff had always worked, it had been partly decentralised to avoid disruption from air raids. So we were running really a local office in Jebus Bush. It's actually a couple of flats on the council estate, which were empty, and they'd been taken over, used as offices. And there I worked with a couple of remnants of staff, I use the word advisedly, because all the best young men had by that time disappeared into the army, and so the council was struggling a bit. I worked with chap in charge, who was around about 60. And, he was left over from the First World War, where he'd been slightly gassed, I think. He had most atrocious bronchitis and coughed and spluttered, you know, in the best of weather. And had generally rather unpleasant habits, I thought. And another chap about the same age, who was junior to the boss, but was in fact a much better officer. First-rate clerical officer, had a beautiful handwriting. One time served in the army, I think, in the regulars. And was bitterly jealous of the fact that his pay was only about the half of what the other chap was getting. And I, as a young 17-year-old, just came up to 17. At times I was a confidant of both my colleagues. When one was out and the other one would talk to me, they both complained bitterly about the other one. And I was sort of in the middle.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it, yes. Yes, it was easy. I remember getting into trouble once because my friendly colleagues, who were actually pushing on most of the arduous work to me, the sort of things like sticking stamps on the employment and insurance cards for each worker once a week, was a painfully tiresome and boring job, and somehow it always seemed to fall to my lot to do that. And whenever there was any extra work to be done, or any filing or any cleaning up, it was Roy who did it. So they felt slightly guilty about this, and on one occasion I remember they said, "Why don't you take an afternoon off? There's not much work today." They said, go to the pictures. And off I went to the pictures, feeling actually not enjoying it a bit, because I felt very guilty. It's not quite my thing, really. I yielded to their pressure. And, of course, when I got back to the next day, I discovered I'd been twigged by somebody, and I was due to see the boss, the grand panjandrum in charge of the whole office, and got wheeled in front of him. Got ticked off.
What about the effects of the war by then? I mean, firstly, air raid precautions and bombing, and you know,
yes,
air raid.
Yes, indeed. Mm.
Did you have a shelter at either East Acton or at work, or both?
At East Acton and home, yes, we had an Anderson shelter in the garden. The garden's about the same size as this one, smallish. So the Anderson was there, and we did, in fact, sleep in that. What happened during the worst of the air raids was that my mother went back to Peebles and stayed with my aunt. And my father and I then ran the menage and kept the house going, did the shopping.
What was the Anderson shelter like? Because, I mean, everyone had one in those days almost, but people don't really know what it's like now. Could you describe it, what it was like to be inside it during a raid?
Mm. So it was sunk about 4 foot into the ground, and the roof projected above the ground. It was covered in earth and sort of sandbags. And it was a circular roof, sort of vaulted roof, made up of corrugated steel, bolted together, just room for a kind of bunk along each side of it, and somebody else lying on it. You could get 3 people into it, or more with great difficulty, but certainly for sleeping. It always felt musty, it was always damp, occasionally a bit of water was down in the bottom, made a little sump to drain it. Generally speaking, it was not exactly palatial, but it was very welcome when the raids were on. That's the raids themselves. One sort of got used to them, but they were always rather frightening and terrifying. We'd hear the sirens would go off perhaps 10 o'clock on a summer night, and a while later one would hear the peculiar throbbing noise of the bombers coming in. Now, at East Acton, we were on the edge of London, well to the west. The planes were roughly coming in from, I suppose, east or northeast. So we tended to get the small proportion of them getting up as far as we were. Most of the bombs, of course, fell on the east side of London and then across the middle. Of course, the trouble with bombs and things like that going off, and anti-aircraft fire going up as well, I mean, it may be miles away, but still very noisy. You hear them a lot, so even when we're not actually under attack or felt fairly safe because we could hear no whistling of bombs, the noise still went on, cracking of shells going off. And then, from time to time, bombs did fall near us. First of all, one evening, we were in the Anderson, I suppose in the small hours, and we heard noises outside as well as plane noises above, and then could see plainly there was some sort of fire going on, so we peered out and discovered that some incendiaries had dropped in the garden, and some were burning. I think we, in fact, had one in the garden, and we did our best to extinguish that.
Wow.
I think that we had some earth in buckets handy, and threw that at it, and it was rather scary, and we kept well away until it finally died out, fortunately.
What about the blackout and the blackout precautions you took at, in your house? Do you remember that?
Yes, I quite forgotten those. That's right. Right at the start of the war, we had to improvise blackout curtains and so on, which my mother organised. And that was a feature of life from then onwards. Always had to be very careful that you remember to pull the blackout curtains up. On some windows, we constructed wooden frames and put sort of black paper pinned onto it as a help to the curtains. And the air raid wardens were always patrolling around if you were showing a chink of light.
Could you see any light? So it's difficult to imagine,
Well, everything was very dark, and that certainly took some getting used to begin with. And on the whole, one tried not to go out because it was really quite difficult. Just a chink of light by accident would, in fact, show up very brightly and elicit a bellow from the ARP warden or a knock on the door or whatever.
Did you have an air raid shelter near that you used for your offices near Shepherd's Bush or in Shepherd's Bush?
I don't think we did. Yes, there must have been. There were air raid shelters on the estate. They were brick built with a little concrete roof, just solid structures, but entirely above ground. They were built in the spaces between flats.
So they were community air raid shelters?
Yes, community, that's right. They were due to hold about 80 people, if I remember rightly.
Mm-hmm. What were they like? Did you ever have to go to it?
I think I must have done once or twice somewhere or other in London when I was caught in an air raid. I was in that type of shelter. It's almost like being on the tube train. It was very crowded. And there's a sort of atmosphere. People were naturally a bit apprehensive.
Was it more scary being with more people, with more, you know, in a way,
No, I don't think so. I think it was more scary on one's own or just with the one or two people around you. A big crowd of people, you were just sort of mixed up with them and... there was a lot going on, a lot of chat going on.
How far did the bombing disrupt transport? You know, I mean, you were getting from Acton to East Acton to Shepherd's Bush. I mean, was it disrupted much, the transport? I presume you went by bus or tube or train?
Yeah, I went by bus at that time. It was quite a short journey. No, I think on the whole, the buses worked quite well. So I suppose they stopped. I'm not sure what happened when there was an air raid alert, whether they had to stop or not. I remember the very famous picture of a bus on a route which I knew well, which has sort of got its bottom on the ground and the engine up in the air on the leaning against a block of flats or whatever. So they did suffer.
But as far as you were concerned, the buses ran normally?
Yes, yes. In fact, I remember now, I used to walk to work a lot because East Acton was really quite close to Shepherd's Bush where the office was. And it was about 20 minutes walk, so I quite frequently walked both ways.
Did you ever think of joining any of the voluntary organisations, a Home Guard, ARP or anything like that, or was there a question of it?
I don't think at that time there was any question of that. I think it wasn't the Home Guard, it was not organised, I think, until after the 1940 debacle. Perhaps I'm wrong here, but roughly speaking, I seem to remember.
But what I mean is, when you were back in 1941, did you ever think of joining it, or did you think of joining the ARP?
No. I don't know why not now. There doesn't seem to be any immediate call for it. Because I was, 1941 was the year when the heaviest air raid on London took place in April. And I was there for that.
Now, do you remember that?
I do remember that. It went on an awful long time. And it was extremely noisy, and bombs did drop fairly near us, and we heard them whistling down. A number of bombs fell at Gunnersbury, not very, very far away, and made an awful mess of the district railway line there, I recall that much. And I was extremely glad when the daylight finally appeared and it all stopped. That really was a very bad raid.
Had food ration and clothes rationing started to bite a bit more by then?
They certainly had, yes, indeed.
What effect did, I mean, you and your dad, how did you manage with food rationing?
Right. I recall the butter ration got very small, and the cheese ration also. So we're really talking about tiny little squares of these fatty foods. I remember we had a lot of porridge, which is easy to make. And my dad was fond of porridge, and so I enjoyed that. We used to have porridge sometimes in the evening, I recall. It seems quite extraordinary to me now. But it was a simple thing to make, but very filling. Otherwise, we had plenty of vegetables, potatoes and cabbage, that kind of thing. It was never rationed, and that was all okay. We weren't too worried about meat. Subsequently, years later, I became a vegetarian, actually. So I still am, of course, now. So,
but you weren't bothered about meat then, are you?
Wasn't too bothered about it, no.
Was just that a family culture of not being bothered about meat?
No, I don't think so. The rest of the family were keen on their meat, and in fact still are. So it was me.
What about clothes rationing? Did that affect you much?
Clothes rationing? Not really. I think, don't know, perhaps I had enough clothes already.
Anything else you recall happening before you were called up, or volunteered, I'm not sure which, but you were there about a year before you were called up, I think. Any other events or things, points of interest?
So that's hard to answer. There must have been some things of outstanding interest, but on the whole, looking back now, it all seems to me a rather grey area. Nothing much did happen, in point of fact.
What would you do for entertainment?
I occasionally went out, for example, to a theatre. I remember going to the London Theatre more than once, which was enjoyable. Again, it was just the blackout made it a little bit difficult getting there and leaving again afterwards, but it was no great problem. And the audiences were very good. Also in London at that time, they said, well, 1941, because the Americans had come into the war. The West End, in fact, soon filled with American soldiers on leave. And so that was a sort of common sight. There were more Americans to be seen than British.
Were you keen on the cinema as well, at the theatre, or was it
just... Yes, that's true. I used to go to the cinema, from both at home and occasionally in the West End, I think.
And dances, or was that too
old? No, that, for me, wasn't quite the thing.
And you wouldn't drink?
Well, when I was 17 onwards, I think my dad and I would have an occasional drink. We occasionally went into a pub and that sort of thing.
Just for a quiet pint.
That's right, yes. Not really my thing. Never was, never will be.
Now, what about your call-up? When did that come?
That was November the 5th, I think, was the actual call-up date to remember, the 5th of November. Prior to that, I was called up for a medical, which took place somewhere in London.
That would be November
41 or 42? This is 42, that's right.
And what do you remember of the medical and the call-up procedure generally?
Medical was fairly routine. Went from one doctor to another, I think it was more than one, and they looked at different parts of me. They looked very suspiciously at my chest, and one of them said to me, did you ever have rickets as a child? Which I felt was slightly insulting, but... I was really pigeon-chested in those days. Let me add in passing that in my first 3 or 4 months in the army, the time came for a routine examination after you'd been so long called up. It was found that I put on about 2 inches in height and about 2 stone in weight.